Today we're speaking to Christine Wickner, who's running for the position of counselor in the city of Salmon Arm. Thank you very much, Christine, for coming to the studio. So let's begin by you telling us something about yourself. Were you born and raised here, or did you come to the Shuswap from elsewhere?
I was not born and raised in Salmon Arm. I was actually born in southwest New Brunswick in a little town called St. Andrews. If you've ever heard of St. Andrews by the Sea, it's a town of 1,500 people. Went to university in a couple different places, but finished my degree in Calgary. Worked sales for a long time in my 20s and had the opportunity. I call myself a bit of a pioneer in the remote work field. I had the opportunity to move to the Okanagan and continue in a position working in sales, but also in a support role to other managers. And I actually had my choice of anywhere in the Okanagan. And I chose Salmon Arm for a couple of reasons. I had a friend from university back in New Brunswick that was living here. He was a golf pro at the golf course. And so we talked about the different options. I could live in Vernon, or Kelowna was a bit far for where I had to sometimes go into work. But he said, you know, I think you'd really like Salmon Arm. There's a really great sense of community, and it's small, and, you know, 1,500 people growing up was probably a little too small, you know. My parents are visiting right now from St. Andrews, and I had to take my dad shopping because there's no stores in St. Andrews. So, you know, even being able to buy a pair of shoes or something like that. But having lived in large cities through my university days, I knew that I didn't want to raise a family in a big city. So it really came down to, somebody asked me this recently, like, why Salmon Arm in like, you know, one short punchy sentence. And I came up with, I wanted to live somewhere where I could run into somebody I knew at the grocery store. That was my barometer. And sure enough, I started getting involved in the recreational community. I played a lot of sports when I first got here, soccer, volleyball, badminton. And I started running into people I knew in the grocery store. And that felt really nice and felt like I could build a community here.
So what kinds of things in general have you been doing since during your time living here?
Yeah, so I would call the recreational days my before kids days. Now I spend, I started working at Okanagan College in post-secondary, and I became, well, first of all, I wanted to give back to the recreational community that I felt I had made a lot of connections with. I can trace back a lot of my, you know, formative relationships to that first year playing in the women's soccer team. So I've been on the board, on and off the board, for a number of years now in a variety of positions. I've become somewhat politically involved. I've been the president of the Shuswap NDP for 5 years now and taken on some different positions within that organization, both at the provincial and federal level. I really like grassroots community work. So when there were folks feeding, doing some lunch programs beside No Frills there at the Safeway Fields, I was involved in that program, making and serving food. I'm also very active and involved in Women Who Wine, which is just an amazing professional networking event or networking group for women. Which has really given me an opportunity to see a whole side of Salmon Arm in our not-for-profit industry and charitable services as well. We hear from three different organizations every 4 months. We all chip in a little bit of money, and we sort of vote on who is most deserving of those funds. And it's really opened my eyes to the amazing work that gets done in our community, but also how much is done, how much of our social fabric is held up by volunteer work and charity work.
So in all of that, what do you like most about living in the Shuswap?
What I like most about living in the Shuswap is that I was really able to put down roots here and not just survive, but thrive. I found Salmon Arm when I moved here very affordable. I was a millennial, you know, that had done the right thing, gone to university, put myself through, gotten my degree, but was still like kind of piecing together work. You know, I was working some hours in this sort of support role, but also had to do my sales on the side and kind of hustle to make ends meet. But also I could take advantage of the, you know, Four Seasons recreation. I love cross-country skiing. I love the beaches we have access to, the trails that we have access to. I would sometimes do sales in Kelowna when I was younger and getting started, and still having to do that as kind of my side hustle. And I just couldn't believe the congestion, the traffic, the amount of time people spend. And of course, I had known that from living in Calgary and places like that. You know, I used to laugh. I'd try to make friends in Calgary and it would be like, before I ask you to get together for coffee, like, where do you live? Because Northwest, Southwest, Southeast, it's going to be, you know, I'd love to have a cup of coffee with you, but I'd also like to not have to commute an hour for that. So that's what I love is you. And I was on the branding committee 5 years ago, and that's something that we identified. You know, there's opportunity, but there's also work-life balance as well.
So turning that question around, is there anything you don't like about living here?
Well, the challenge I see is that that's changed a little bit. I'm not sure if 25-year-old me could survive in Salmon Arm, let alone thrive. I feel like affordability is increasingly challenging for folks, especially young people. You know, the house that I rented when I moved here was $1,200 for the entire house. I could get a couple of roommates. It was very affordable, even with the fact that I was, you know, sort of piecing work together. And it really, it allowed me to save money when I met my husband. It was still possible for us to get into the housing market. I don't think I would be able to get into the housing market at the age that we did now. And wages haven't, like, at the same time, rent and expenses have doubled. I'm sure that house would now be $2,400. And there's no way that wages have doubled for the work that I was doing at that time. So it concerns me that, like, what we have this saying in labor, that what I want for myself, I want for others. And so I want other young people to be able to come here and have and thrive in the way that I was able to, not just for themselves, but also because we need that. You know, my husband and I try to go out for a meal or to a restaurant, and it's, you know, there's long lineups. Some restaurants are closed many days of the week because they don't have staff. And I see that as a direct link, is that we're not, there's a huge gap between folks that are doing well and folks that are not doing so well. And we need any society for the economy, for our well-being, needs a strong middle class. Mm-hmm. And I think that somehow we veered away from that.
So what do you feel are your most important personal attributes and values?
So I consider myself an ordinary person. You know, I'm not particularly fancy, or I'm educated, but I also have a strong working class background. You know, I remember working at the night shift at the fish plant to save money to go back to school, because I had enough money for the first couple of years, but then it was like, now you're going to be on your own a bit. So I took a year off, regrouped. And so that work ethic is very strong with myself. My values, I'm an incredibly values-driven person. I try to live my values every day. I actually have a graduate certificate from Royal Roads University in values-based leadership. And so my top ones are transparency, which I think is why I'm so passionate about politics, because democracy is fundamental, I think, to a functioning society. I also, integrity is incredibly important to me. So I try to always follow through on a commitment that I've made. And if I can't, I renegotiate that commitment. Mm-hmm. And honesty I think is really important as well. I recently discovered that I'm neurodivergent, which is a term not everybody's familiar with, but essentially it's not neurotypical spectrum. So lots of folks with ADHD or autism, things like that would be considered neurodivergent. And so I have ADHD. It was undiagnosed for a lot of my life. But one of the things I've learned is that because of our challenges with executive function, it's actually really challenging for us to not tell the truth. So it's how our brains work that we can't like think out the different steps that it would take for us to lie and keep up with that lie. And so sometimes that gets me in trouble because neurodivergent folks are known for being sometimes a little bit brutally honest. Which I do try to be cognizant of and aware of. And it really helps me having the diagnosis to be able to keep that in check. But also another value that I don't think I mentioned is compassion. And I think that that combination of honesty and compassion keeps the brutal honesty in check just a little bit, hopefully.
So in line with this sort of line of conversation, are there some persons you particularly respect in this community?
Yes. I would say the people that I respect most in this community, and I try to get their input on in terms of not even strategy, I hate that word. Mm-hmm. Just like what's important to people and how we work together, are often people that are non-partisan in politics. So I realize that my political home is the NDP. I also recognize that my political home could use a serious redecorating. I hope folks don't hold that too much against me. I mean, political parties are really, I describe them as like, my son has one of those balls where you're like jamming shapes into the different ones. And it's like, you just got to find one that fits the most, right? There's nothing perfect about any political party. It's really just more about values. Mm. And so the people that I look to the most for advice are people that have been members of the Conservative Party at one point, the Liberals, the NDP, sometimes they're Greens, because all of those ideas and those spectrums are important. They're just different vehicles for getting to the same place we all want to get to as a community, which is a safe, healthy planet for our families, for ourselves, and for future generations.
In your opinion, then, what are the most important issues facing Salmon Arm and this area?
I think affordability, and I think we have to address the climate crisis, not just for ourselves here at home, but I mean, we're part of a larger ecosystem. We have to be global citizens and do our part here at home to address what is going to be a challenging next few years and decades, if we're being honest with ourselves. There needs to be a plan. So that's one thing that I think, you know, one of my platform pieces is stewarding our land. And a big piece of that is the official community plan. You know, we're coming up on renewing one. It needs to be a governance document that guides us through these challenging times. It needs to meet the crisis where it's at and at the scale that it's at, that's required to handle these, because we don't have a lot of time. I see a bit of a lack of planning, to be honest. And then the other thing that I sometimes see with organizations as a whole that I've been a part of is sometimes you create a plan and then you have trouble following it, which is, it's challenging for the people that made the plan. You know, I'm sure staff I have a lot of friends that work in local government, not at the city, but other cities across the province and the CSRD. And, you know, planning is a whole beast and profession on its own. And when we don't follow the plan that's created by staff and with engagement and things like that, it's a disservice to that hard work that's been done. So of course there needs to be, I like to use the term planful. You're always going to have situations where you need to be responsive, but there needs to be a solid plan from the beginning and a commitment and accountability to follow that plan.
So what is your main personal reason for running for office?
Well, it's got to be my children. I mean, there's just, yeah, there's no question that everything I do is so that they're safe and happy and healthy.
Now, have you ever run for political office before?
I have not. Not in like a general election public space. There's been a couple of times recently where I've been upset with the direction the party has been going in at the BCNDP. And they do this thing within party politics often where they run slates. So essentially people are predetermined before convention happens that they're running together on this sort of agenda. And it just feels very contrived. It feels like things are done behind closed doors. And so it's not that I've run necessarily thinking, actually, that's not true. I mean, anytime you put your name forward, I don't think it's right to put your name forward if you don't intend to do the job. And I certainly would have done the job had I been elected. But it was really about giving an option to the establishment narrative and giving grassroots members an opportunity to hear from somebody that says, like, hey, I actually feel like things have been going in not the right direction in terms of democratic procedures and things like that. I think there's always room for a dissenting voice. It needs to be a respectful dissenting voice, but I think that I've always maintained that as well.
So what's it like for you running in this election campaign?
It's hard. You know, the campaign started off really well. I've gotten lots of positive reactions from folks that like the idea that I'm young and I'm a little bit newer. Like, I've been in Salmon Arm for over a decade, which is not a short amount of time. But sometimes in small towns, a decade, and you compare that to 3 decades or 4 decades or more, comparatively, it seems like you're new. But people, I think, you know, we also have there's a large demographic of us that are new, that have moved here for many of the same reasons that I outlined. And so I think they appreciate that I bring a different perspective, maybe their voice to the table. And then folks that have seen a lot of the same faces at the table for a long time, even them being from Salmon Arm, recognize that that's a good thing to have a variety of voices. There's been some pushback, you know, and I think whenever a young person puts their name forward, it's like, do they have enough life experience? I would ask people to focus on lived experience versus life experience. Just because I'm young doesn't mean I'm not qualified. Like I said, I've been on numerous boards. I take a strong interest in governance and democratic procedures. For the last 3 years, I've been taking online courses through the Harvard Kennedy School. I don't say that as like, look at me, I went to Harvard. I didn't get into Harvard. I gave Harvard my credit card and they let me take a course there with a bunch of other people that really just wanted to put Harvard on their resume. The courses I've been taking are leading up to something called a public leadership credential. And so within that, there's three areas that you take 2 courses each in. One is policy design and implementation. One is evidence-based decision making. And another one is ethical leadership. So I haven't taken the ethical leadership ones because I do feel like it's a bit of a crossover with my values-based leadership side of things. But the designing policy and the evidence-based decision making, it has just been so amazing and so helpful in preparing me for this role. the evidence-based stuff. We make so many decisions based on feeling. And feeling is important, especially, you know, I have lots of feelings. Like, I get choked up talking about my children's future. So feelings are good, but we also need to connect that to data. And we need to make sure that the decisions we think are right based on our feeling are actually going to produce the outcomes that we want. And a lot of times, policy is implemented based on a feeling, and we get an outcome that we did not intend. And so I think that that's super important. Policy, the design and implementation, I learned a lot there where, you know, we talk about policies have to be politically supportable. You can't just ram policy down people's throats. It's not going to work if they're not bought in, because they'll just not follow the policy. And if you don't, often you need at least a majority of people to adopt the policy. Otherwise, you're just going to spend a disgusting amount of money trying to enforce a policy that nobody wanted, or it's just going to not work. It has to be technically supported. So policy has, like, that's what I was just talking about, where it has to do what it's supposed to do. It has to fix, it's supposed to fix the problem that you have. And sometimes that, as much as it's, it sounds funny, sometimes that just isn't what happens. And then the other one is organizationally implementable. So, you know, does the city have the infrastructure to implement this particular policy? So the composting is a great example of that. You know, it's like, is it politically supportable? They did a really great job engaging folks and getting people on board, even though there was some resistance at first. Is it going to do what it's supposed to do? Yeah, we know that we have diverted millions, I think, of tons. Not super good on numbers and stuff like that, but it's a lot. Like, let's just call it a lot of food from the landfill. And it was organizationally implementable because we already had curbside pickup. If we didn't have curbside pickup and then we were like, let's do compost, that wouldn't make sense. So those are the kind of three components that I've looked at there and learned about. And that's kind of the lens that I would be taking for any legislation or policy change that I would want to implement.
So tell our listeners what you would like to accomplish if you're elected.
I would like to see Salmon Arm be a leader on the climate front. I think we have a huge opportunity. Actually, the main thing, I think where we need to start, and it's the first thing that I'm talking about in my platform, is engaging citizens. We need more robust opportunities to talk about these issues because, like I said, anything we do needs to be politically supportable. So we need to have opportunities to ask people what they think will be solutions to what I see as the two big challenges we'll be facing in the next 10 years, which is affordability and climate. So I think our committees have a huge impact on that. From working in the partisan politics that I have, I see how, like, committees are really the backbone of the work that needs to be done to get policy where it can be implemented by the leadership. They're the ones that do these consultative processes. They consult experts. One thing that I see in politics nowadays is that politicians seem to want to be the experts about everything, and that's just not possible. I am not a climate expert, but I know that there are a huge number of people on our Climate Action Committee that have a wealth of knowledge and understanding and have the time and the energy to research what other cities are doing, to borrow from the best of the best. I was in, you know, when I was in sales and business, we used to call it stealing from the best with pride. If somebody else is doing something better than you, why wouldn't you figure out if you can do that too? And so that's super important, is that when the Climate Action Committee comes to me and says, this is, you know, we've done our time, we've done our research, this is what you need to do. It's my job to have to say, okay, you know, are people bought in? Are the citizens bought in? Have we done the work? And then and help them do that work so that we can empower them and say, yep, that's what we're going to do. It's not my job to, it's not a politician's job to have all the answers, because it's just not possible.
So now, finally, if you're elected, what do you hope to leave as a legacy when your time in office comes to an end?
A really amazing official community plan that the community is proud of and has been implemented effectively and efficiently to make Salmon Arm affordable for everyone, as well as safe for everyone.
Christine, thank you very much again for coming in and sharing your thoughts about being a candidate in the upcoming election. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Big fan of community radio.